Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
All right, everybody. Welcome. You're listening to the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio with your boys. For the evening, I'm Tristan Ducrosse. On my side, as always, is my partner in crime, the one and only Sean Ducrosse. Tristan, it's time to take everybody to Suplex City Exit Las Vegas Boulevard. Sean, could we be witnessing history at UFC 200 in more ways than one? Absolutely, and this show is packed. We also have a special guest on the show as Bellator's own MMA lightweight champion joins us as well. So, first up, Sean, we're going to talk about a little UFC action and about the latest storylines that are coming out of UFC 200 this weekend. We had the press conference already happen with Brock Lesnar taking it to the stage and a guy asking him questions about his illness that made him leave the UFC the first round. And it made many people kind of think about, well, what's this storyline about? And then you also have the storyline about Misha Tate defending her first title. Yeah, and we'll get to it in all these other storylines because there's so many of them going into this UFC event and their biggest one. And the biggest one is, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, Brock Lesnar's storyline supersedes anything that's going on in my eyes for UFC 200. Yes, DC and John Jones is another big storyline that we'll get to in a minute. But when you have Brock Lesnar coming back from his disease and his illness that had him step away and his mental state that it wasn't right at the time, then you know what? At this time, you've got to look at it and say, you know what? My time is now. And that's what Brock Lesnar is saying. He felt more comfortable going into this fight and picking this fight against Mark Hunt and saying, you know what? This is the fight that I want. You've got to give him props. We'll break down his fight versus Mark Hunt later on. But when you're in that mental state, how do you even change your thought process? How do you even get back on the grind when you've been away from MMA for what's been, what, 2 years now?
Well, he's been able to maintain his shape and stay physically fit because he's been in the WWE since leaving the organization the first time around.
And it's not hard to get back into MMA training when that's the type of training he does all the time. So it's easy for him to jump back in that world and do what he did. Right now, he's in his peak. He's back in his prime. So when you're looking at what you're dealing with Brock Lesnar, it's a relatively simple concept for him is because it's still in his blood. It's still in his everyday life.
Yeah, considering that he just received another black belt. I mean, not a black belt. What was it? A purple belt, I think it is.
So he's already received that. So, yeah, Tristan, I get it. He's still training. He's still learning. He's still progressing. The evolution is going to be key that we're trying to witness this Saturday. Has he evolved? Has he adapted? Or is he just that strong brute of a guy? That remains to be seen. Then you look at the other big storyline. That's Misha Tate's first title defense against Amanda Nunes. Is she a one-hit wonder?
Right.
That's the biggest question mark that she has going into this. Did she finally win this fight because she fought somebody that was on the same level of her as Holly Holm? That she could outstrike, outgrapple, where when she got into a grappling match with Ronda Rousey, it wasn't on the same level? Are we going to see that calm striker in Misha Tate that we saw against Holly Holm? That's the question marks you have going into that fight. And that's the thing. You look at this card from top to bottom, one way or another. You go left, you go right. There is something that stands out about every single fight and where you have more questions than you do have answers right now. So you're looking at UFC 200 and saying, you know what?
This is where all your answers are going to be answered at the end of the night.
Yeah, when the dust is settled, we're going to have our guys that are going to stand out. We're going to have our guys that are going to be either crowned new champs or on their way to a future title bout. We're going to get those answers. We're going to get the answers whether or not Misha Tate is for real or a pretender. We're going to get to see Brock Lesnar, the beast incarnate, you know, whether or not this is his last hurrah or not. We're going to get Cain Velasquez. Is this his last dance or not? And that's the other storyline that comes into this. Cain Velasquez, a guy that's coming off a two-year layoff, a guy that was what was perhaps the cream of the crop in the heavyweight division. You looked at Cain Velasquez and said, that's the guy I want to be. That's the guy that's your prototypical heavyweight that can grind it out and outstrike you that you haven't seen in a while. Then you look. Injuries take effect. He starts to get hurt. He tears his meniscus twice. If he doesn't win, if he doesn't beat Travis Hoppe Brown, what is next for him?
Right? Where does this lead him?
Can he even continue?
Yeah, so, Sean, you just mentioned the injuries that Cain Velasquez has had. So my question now comes out to, really, how healthy is Cain Velasquez? Is he 100% coming into this fight, or is he not? And again, our boys over at Fightbook, you will even laugh again. What have I been saying about every single fight? Every single fight. What is one thing I say that you look for to see if the guy's going to come in and fight? I say look at his physique. You go back and you look.
If he's fluffy, he's going to lose.
When you look at Cain Velasquez's fight, his last fight in the octagon against Fabricio Werdum, what did he look like?
Fluffy!
That's what you'll be looking at when he takes on Travis Hoppe Brown. Is he fluffy around the waist? If he's fluffy around the waist, it was another bad camp, and Hoppe Brown is going to go run right through him. And Hoppe Brown is going to be standing at the other end with his arm raised up as that he's the champ. So you look at this, you don't want to see Cain Velasquez go down a bad route. He's pulled out a number of fights, and it's been quite his toughness has been questioned.
Yes, it has.
Another answer will have to be given at UFC 200.
But we also have to think about Cain Velasquez, too. We also have to think about that here's a man that is in his prime, okay? So can he put all the injuries behind him?
And that's the biggest question.
And face a guy that is more athletic, more explosive than Cain Velasquez.
And that's I get that he's a little bit more explosive. But the question mark that you have to look at Travis Hoppe Brown, the biggest question that's being asked of him is, well, how do you look at that fight? Is that Travis Brown had his own name for the longest time. Everybody knew who Travis Brown was. Then Travis Brown went down a dark alley and became this wife beater, if you will. That whole shenanigans that happened on Instagram. How has he risen above that? Has he risen above that to a point that people still know who Travis Brown is? Or do the MMA hopefuls on the outside that just come in when there's a big fight, or do they just know Travis Brown as simply Ronda Rousey's boyfriend?
How sad is
that? Again, UFC, you will have these answers answered. If Travis Brown comes in and beats Cain Velasquez, I think he gets his name back because of who Cain is. Again, another question rather than an answer.
Right? And then we're also going to get an answer from the Bones Jones DC collision, because that is based off of there can only be one champ. Only one. You have two guys that are both holding a light heavyweight championship title belt.
And that both of them vows that they are the best in the business.
And that boggles my mind. How does John Jones have a title when he was stripped of the title?
Daniel Cormier is the champ. Is the champ. So if you look at it,
yeah, did I miss a presser here somewhere that they just stripped John Jones of the title and they gave John Jones the title back? Did I miss
the memo?
This somewhere in translation here? Did we miss something?
Because it basically goes to show me that you gave back the guy his title.
Right, because this is a unification for the light heavyweight title. So at some point there has to be a clerical error or something to all of a sudden say that, hey, so somewhere
over the rainbow
and across the yellow brick road, we got John Jones being the light heavyweight champion again. And he fought Ovince St. Preux, which I did not think was for a light heavyweight strap, unless I'm mistaken. Because that was his first title fight return. Now, I could be wrong on that.
No, I think we're both right on that. And we can ask our buddies from Fightbook MMA.
Does anybody remember if Ovince St. Preux fight was for a title? Because I'm drawing a huge mental blank right now, because I for one, don't think that was for a title. Because that's the only thing that would make sense, is that Ovince St. Preux and the John Jones fight was for a vacated title?
You can't just all of a sudden make a vacated title that a title was being held by Daniel Cormier.
So again, there's something that is lost here. Did you take the title away from... Nope, can't do that either.
See, I'm just about as dumbfounded as you are. So that's another storyline. How did he get the title? Why is this even a unification title when it doesn't even need to be a unification title?
So you've got that going in. Are you going to have a grind war in that fight? Or are you going to get the DC guy that comes out and says, you know what? I'm going to beat him for the first 25 minutes again.
Really?
Will that happen?
Right?
I just don't see this outcome going any differently than previous. So you've got a lot of question marks going into that fight. Is that you look at Daniel Cormier, he's coming off Top Contender fights. You're coming off of John Jones coming off a win against Ovince St. Preux. Not nothing to take away from Ovince, but he's not the same level guys that you look at and see. What is it? And you see DC fighting guys that are elevated a little bit higher than what John Jones has fought since he came back. You look at that, and then the biggest question mark. I mean, you got three title fights. The other one that you cannot look away from is what type of Jose Aldo are we going to get? We were talking about that off the show. You, myself, and my wife. We were all talking about it. What type of Jose Aldo are we going to get? Especially against a guy like Frankie Edgar, who is hell-bent on trying to reestablish and reclaim his rightful, what he self-proclaims his rightful throne. Dude, this has all the implications to be a star-studded fight. But everybody looks at Jose Aldo still as this guy that could be the face of the division. I get it. But did y'all not see that he was knocked out in 13 seconds by what many people call a fluke by Mr. Touchbutt himself and Conor McGregor? But let's be real here. You still have to get hit. You still have to hit the mat. You still get knocked out.
Precision beats power all the time.
All day.
The best phrase, the best wording that you'll ever hear anywhere else came from Conor McGregor. Precision beats power.
My biggest question is that
if you have the power and you have the precision, though, which Frankie Edgar normally does, what does that say for the end game of Jose Aldo, Sean?
If Jose Aldo goes into this fight and it does not end well for Jose Aldo,
This is by far one of the baddest moments in the career of Jose Aldo.
So, to go back, yes, so the Ofin St. Preux, as well as the John Jones fight, was for an interim title.
Okay.
Because of the fact that Daniel Cormier was set to fight John Jones, and they scrapped that fight, so that's why Ofin...
Because of an injury to...
Daniel Cormier.
Right.
So that's how Ofin St. Preux got in. That's how John Jones ended up back with his title.
Okay, but still, I'm... Okay, so that goes to my second point about the John Jones situation. Is so they made up a title, gave a title to John Jones, so you could get title versus title for a unification. That's what I got out of that. So, based off of your boys over at Fightbook MMA, is that we get a title unification all because DC got injured. He gets put out. They wanted a title fight. You get an interim title for a fake title for a fake title. I just don't get how you make fake title for a fake title. Oh, wait. DC doesn't get the real title because it's an interim title because you stripped John Jones of the title, so that's an interim title. Then we're going to make another interim title because you two are going to fight because DC can't fight, so we have a fake title versus a fake title to get a real title.
Whatever works to draw in the people, and that's what we have here.
Well,
either way,
to the UFC to make a fake title.
It's like the WWE making the world title into two separate world titles because they're splitting the brand. Kind of the same thing. It happened.
Okay,
to draw.
But you don't have Raw or you don't have SmackDown. You have the UFC. You technically should not be able to create two titles
you
to get one title.
You get injuries more than you get injuries in wrestling. Okay.
You are talking about a world title, folks. A world title, Sean. A world title. There could only be one person. I hate these interim titles.
Tristan, but the interim titles are going to happen if the guy's out for a year.
He hasn't been out for a year. They waited a year. I was guaranteed that he was healthy like 4 or 5 months down the road. He was fine.
But
let's be real on that. He was fine. He ate a couple tweakies, did his little YouTube video and stuff like that about him twerking.
But to talk about being healthy,
yes,
goes right back to our comment about Jose Aldo. How healthy is he mentally right now from that knockout that he suffered at the hands of Conor McGregor? How mentally ready is he to take on a beast of Frankie Edgar? Somebody that could just strike
fear?
No, but strike. Not necessarily as good as Conor McGregor can strike, but he can strike with the best of them. He's no pushover. What are you going to see from Jose Aldo? You know what you're getting from Frankie Edgar. The only question I have for Frankie Edgar is, can Frankie Edgar get over his hump and beat Jose Aldo?
Frankie Edgar reminds me a lot of the San Jose Sharks. He has a lot of these inner demons inside of him when he gets into big title fights or big fights in general. And those demons kind of tend to resurrect themselves. And it's not going to be the time where who are you going to call the Ghostbusters to take out the ghosts. Frankie Edgar needs to fight his inner self and come out, instead of talking about what he is, become who he should be, and that is simply become the answer to Jose Aldo and the answer to his longevity in the sport as a future title contender. This is a guy that is on a five-fight win streak. Stop all the demons and all the stuff that's coming out. Let's go. Let's see you put something together. You beat Chad Mendes. You beat Uriah Faber. That's all cool. That's all well and dandy.
But you go
but
back.
These are two guys that, theoretically, on paper, you should have done what you did.
And see, and then you go back, Tristan, and you look on paper, and you talk about the mental preparation going into this game about Jose Aldo. What about the mental preparation for Frankie Edgar? Is he finally going to get over that hump for a guy that he lost to Benson Henderson, for a guy that lost to Jose Aldo four titles? Can he get over his shot and finally reclaim the gold?
That's what I'm talking about. He has to channel his inner demons. Call the Ghostbusters, whatever you have to do to get those ghosts eliminated so you could climb the top of the throne. Because if he loses to Jose Aldo, that's what he'll be forever known as, the guy that couldn't get the big fight win. Right? And that's a shame because he won the title before. So where did it all go wrong for Frankie Edgar? UFC 200, story of many tales. Absolutely. But we're going to go into more of the UFC preview here coming up next right here on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to your boys, the Ducrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristan Ducrosse. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducrosse Brothers, head over to TheHotspotShow.com. All right, everybody, we are back. We are the Sports Warriors, the Ducrosse Brothers, Sean and Tracy Ducrosse. Sean, huge show in store for our fans out there today. Fight Week is here. We got three UFC shows almost seamlessly back-to-back. You have the Bellator lightweight champion crossing the line with the Ducrosse Brothers, most notably my brother, Sean, because unfortunately I wasn't there and I'm bummed. But next time, we'll get it together. But Michael Chandler, lightweight champion of Bellator, sat down with my brother. Awesome interview. Killed that. And that's coming up here soon. In the meantime, UFC 200 preview. Fight Week, incredible, top to bottom. We were briefly talking about before we went into break was about the Frankie Edgar and Jose Aldo matchup. And about the resurrection, kind of get rid of that stigma of the failing to win the big fights for Frankie Edgar. And really, what is the mental mindset of Jose Aldo after getting knocked down in 13 seconds by Conor McGregor? It's really a tale of two stories between two guys that were once highly thought of, one's going in the complete opposite direction while the other one's going full steam straight ahead, and that's Frankie Edgar. It's even said, you guys can come over to Blog Talk Radio, join us in the chat room, talk it up with your boys. Like Fight Book MMA says, he believes that Frankie Edgar's going to win because he's mentally the stronger of the two. We just discussed that. I believe that the same way. I believe that when you get knocked out that bad and decisively like Jose Aldo did, I don't see how you can come back from that because that was such a mental war game between him and Conor McGregor. And then for him to get knocked out the way he did, it was just something that, you know what? How do you come back from that? How do you prepare yourself for that? Was it just me or did Jose Aldo look normal at the weigh-in? He didn't look angry. He didn't look like he cared. He was just standing there, and that was that. I mean, at the presser, not the weigh-ins. We'll see what he looks like at the weigh-ins on Friday. But you look at it, he didn't look the same. I was expecting him to get a little bit more into Frankie Edgar's face, a little bit more anger. I just didn't see it. I mean, he's got a weird-looking mustache thing going on. Not sure what everybody's hoopla is about these mustaches or the ability to try to grow facial hair. I mean, only some people look good growing facial hair, just saying.
Like you and I?
So, there's a lot going in this fight. But my pick is for Frankie Edgar. You got a tale of two strikers. And Frankie Edgar, to me, packs more of a punch. If Jose Aldo wants this fight, wants an opportunity of reclaiming his 145 title, he's got to simply is throw leg kicks. Get back to being the soccer kick fighter that you were. Put it all together. Dominate that way. But if he gets into a close encounter of striking with Frankie Edgar, Frankie Edgar's going to knock him out just like Conor McGregor did. So I have Frankie Edgar going ahead and knocking out Jose Aldo for the second time because he's just not ready yet. He needs to regroup, reevaluate where he's at mentally. I don't think he's ready to be put on a big stage like this is mentally. You should have started him off like a UFC 198 and such because of the fact that you can ease him back into it. But he already lost on a big stage of them all. And then you throw up UFC 200 and say, all right, you get your 145 title shot back again. What? Why? Right? Like, give somebody else another shot against Frankie Edgar. Let somebody else work its way up. Why does he get an immediate title rematch? It just boggles my mind about why you would even go to that extent. See, so you are going Frankie Edgar. I'm going Frankie Edgar for the simple fact that he just needs to rip off that Band-Aid and get that big fight win. Simple as that. Get the big fight win. Get it out of your way. Finally beat Jose Aldo. Because if Jose Aldo loses, I think this is officially the downward spiral of Jose Aldo. And it goes back to what Conor McGregor said. He wasn't mentally tough. We'll see just how mentally tough he is come UFC 200. But what everybody still wants to see is Frankie Edgar versus Conor McGregor. That's what everybody wants to see. But what everybody else wants to see is Daniel Cormier versus John Jones. I was looking at all these fights. Want to know what stood out to me on all these fights? It's a tell of two sides. You're either a striker or you're a grappler.
It is simple as that.
You don't see too many striker versus striker. It's striker versus grappler. You have that here. Daniel Cormier, the grappler. John Jones, the striker. Daniel Cormier has it the toughest. And that is, he's got to find a way to get inside the guard, inside the clinch of John Jones.
He has to be able to push it.
He has to be able to beat the reach of John Jones. The last time he did that, he connected several times with John Jones. John Jones didn't like to get hit. So what did John Jones do? Clinch. Grind it out a win. But the thing though, the difference between this and the last fight between these two is that if John Jones gets into a clinch war with Daniel Cormier,
it won't end well for John Jones.
It's not going to be a grind win. John Jones is going to throw his elbows.
You really think the inside work we're going to see the old John Jones inside the clinch,
yes,
being able to rain elbows?
Yes, because that's how much they hate each other.
See,
before the last fight, John Jones was afraid of the power of Daniel Cormier. So what he did was, I'm going to grind out a win. I'm going to avoid the power.
I'm going to outgrind you.
This time, he's not going to go out there and avoid the power. He feels that he can take anything that Daniel Cormier is going to dish out in this fight. He believes he has the upper hand in this fight. That's the biggest question mark. If he stands toe-to-toe with Daniel Cormier and deals with Daniel Cormier's power inside the clinch, the dirty boxing, will it be enough where he can defeat John Jones, or will John Jones bring back the elbows? That's the question mark we all have. We saw Daniel Cormier go in against a brute of a striker and Anthony Rumble Johnson, and take him down over and over again.
and eventually submitted him in that fight. Rumble Johnson, a pure striker from everybody's standpoint that can knock out anybody and their mama, to the point that you look at this fight, and if he can avoid the power from Rumble, he should in theory be able to avoid the power from John Jones. If he does that, you're going to have a new light heavyweight champion in Daniel Cormier. But that's a bigger what if.
See, I feel bad for Daniel Cormier in this. This alone is because John Jones got the ring rust off against Ovince St. Preux.
No doubt.
So now it becomes a little bit more fascinating matchup because you get a guy that finally had a fight underneath his belt. Instead of coming in after a year off, facing Daniel Cormier. I would have said DC had a great shot at beating John Jones and taking that title away. Unfortunately, when I sit here and I watch footage and I break down the tapes and I watch the two fight, the way that I see this is that it won't be any different. I don't see Daniel Cormier as a scary stand-up banger. I don't. What scares me about him is his just straight-out wrestling. But last time he faced him, John Jones is the one that out-wrestled DC.
Correct.
And so my question now is, goes back to just the same question that people have with Jose Aldo. How mentally tough and mentally prepared is Daniel Cormier coming into this fight against John Jones?
And did he learn from his last fight that sometimes you got to give up some to get some? And in this, he's got to give up ground to try to get the takedown. He needs to explode to try to get the takedown. He cannot let John Jones out-wrestle him again, or even allow him to get that distance between them two. He's going to have to come out the guy determined that this is his center of his octagon. This is his title, and nobody's going to take it. That's the only way DC wins this. If John Jones comes out there and he's calm, cool, and collected, standing in his frog pose, looking across the octagon into DC's eyes, looking right into his soul, he will literally say, "Get over here." Simple as that.
And throw out the scorpion chain?
Absolutely. And suck him right into his play game. And it'll be all over.
And that's the thing, is that John Jones is baiting Daniel Cormier into his game.
And everybody thinks it's the other way around. Like, I totally see it as, this is John Jones' game. Like for real, this is John Jones 110%. And everybody sees it completely different. And as if he's being sucked into DC's game. It's like, dude, you have no idea what is going on behind that curtain. You have no idea. I see John Jones laughing every single time that he says something. And he looks over across at DC, and DC like gives him this weird look. He's like, "Boy, I got you. Don't even trip, I got you."
Like at the presser, you see John Jones more smiling, and I think that annoys Daniel Cormier more than anything. All he's got to do is look at him and go, "What's up?
Right?
How you doing?"
And that just annoys Daniel Cormier.
John Jones can flirt with DC and suck him right in.
And that's what's happening.
He can give you the goo-goo eyes, and you're just like,
yeah. You're mesmerized by John Jones.
You've never seen John Jones.
It's as simple as that.
Then you go back and you look over at the other fight that you and I were talking about. Cain Velasquez versus Travis Hoppe Brown.
Yep.
Velasquez lost to Verdum at UFC 188 because he looked a little fluffy. He outstruck Verdum, or at least that's what many people thought he did, was in that fight, was he won the striking aspect in that fight until he got beat by Verdum. But for a heavyweight, how can one come back from a torn rotator cuff, two meniscus tears, a hand injury, and a back injury? And in MMA,
In combat sports, how can an individual come back from all those injuries? It's not like Dominic Cruz, who had seemingly a dozen knee surgeries, and be able to come back. It's a little bit different when your whole body essentially is breaking down.
It's hard to step inside of a cage and expect to throw down with your best self against a guy like Travis Hopper Brown. For Kane needs to find a little bit of his prime and all of a sudden worry about this fight being a clinch war and cage work game. That's the way this fight has to go in order for Cain Velasquez to win. It has to be a clinch war. It has to be against the cage.
When Cain Velasquez last won his notable fights, the one thing that stood out in all those fights, Tristan, was his ability to take a striker down to the mat, win it inside the clinch, win it on the mat. That's when he became the juggernaut in the heavyweight division, was the ability to go, okay, I'm going to face a striker. Guess what? I'm going to outsmart him. I'm going to take him down. Oh, I'm facing a grappler. Guess what? I'm going to outstrike him, because he was mentally smarter than everybody else at that time.
He was always that fighter that was one step ahead.
Correct. And now he's that fighter that's one step behind. And can he find that medium road to come back to the old Cain Velasquez? At least 90%.
My only worry about this fight is that Kane gets into the slug war with Travis Hopper Brown.
Yeah.
And my only concern is that with Travis Hopper Brown at his new camp in Glendale, Arizona, called the Fighting Club. Rule number one is you don't talk about Fight Club. But nonetheless, is his counterpunching has been ridiculous since he changed and adapted and went to the new camp. I don't want Cain Velasquez to get into a slug war with Hopper Brown, since now he's added that repertoire to his game plan, is counterpunching. Here's a kickboxer that will literally stand there and bang with you till you can't move anymore. That's my concern, is that he's added that to his game plan. So as a guy like Cain Velasquez, you can't strike with a guy that's like that now.
And if you're
still slow and you're still sluggish from the last time you fought, this ends relatively quick. And Hopper Brown is going to be standing at the top.
So then you look at, you're talking about outstriking, and you switch over to UFC Fight Night 90 on UFC Fight Pass. Don't know why this is there. But the biggest and one of the relatively only fights that I care about outside of the Will Brooks fight is that you got Rafael Dos Anjos versus Eddie Alvarez. You're talking about the grinder versus the striker. That's what Eddie Alvarez is. But my question to you, is Eddie Alvarez the second coming of Michael Bisping? And folks, I say that genuinely. I say that because of the fact that Eddie Alvarez jumped into this title contender title shot because of the fact of injuries to Tony Ferguson and Khabib, and the fact that he defeated Anthony Pettis and Donald Cerrone. So is this the next Michael Bisping? Will Eddie Alvarez be able to take that next step and grind out a win and avoid the big shots from Dos Anjos, who seemingly is one of the most premier strikers in the 155 division?
Dude, and it's crazy because with the 155 division that you're looking at, Eddie Alvarez has been training like a madman. And he says there's no such thing as overtraining. I get it. But you can also overexert yourself and work you to the brink. My question, though, about Eddie Alvarez is that he says his time is now. Well, where was your time when you stepped into the UFC? Because you put on lackluster performances since coming,
when you were already dubbed as beast and a juggernaut over in Bellator.
And then winning tournaments after tournaments. Establishing yourself as a perennial top flight contender at 155.
How do you allow him at this point of his career to even say that it's time now when he hasn't done anything to even remotely have people mention about whether or not he's ready or not? He's facing Rafael Dos Anjos, who could literally at any point in time pick you apart. And ask Donald Cerrone how well that turned out for him. Ask Nate Diaz how well did that turn out for him. I hope Eddie Alvarez knows what he's getting himself into with such a perennial striker that Dos Anjos is.
This will either take you to the next level, or it'll mentally break you
and kill your momentum.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, UFC 200 is all about the mental game. All about the mental game. Who's mentally ready? Who's not mentally ready? Misha Tate, first title defense. Is she mentally ready to put her title against a girl like Emmanuel Nunes? Could this be one and done for Misha Tate? Is Will Brooks mentally ready to jump from Bellator to the UFC on a big stage, UFC Fight Night 90, on the eve of UFC 200 against Ross Pearson? So many questions. When I couldn't believe when I was getting ready for this show about all the unanswered questions, all about the mental preparation and how the game can seemingly change in a blink of an eye, on a flip of a coin, on a change of a dime. You can go so many different ways. What will the landscape of UFC be after UFC 200, after UFC Fight Night 90, after UFC Ultimate Fighter 23? The landscape is going to alter one way or another, because you go across and you look at Ultimate Fighter 23 season finale, you want a Jacek versus Claudia Gadella. The collision course is finally here. There is no meteor coming. It's just going to be a meteor shower that is raining down on UFC come Ultimate Fighter 23 finale.
Claudia versus Joanna JJ.
Dude, have you seen the video of Claudia doing whatever the heck she was doing with the pad work?
The fact that she was just more or less with her hands there, and then the other guy was hitting the
pad?
Dude,
the guy was doing most of the pad work. Like, are you kidding me?
It's like,
Filming this, folks.
It's like, you're making my prediction look weak.
Claudia Gadella has always thought she won her decision back in December of 2014.
I still think she did, personally.
Can you believe that JJ has fought and won over Esperanza, Panay, Letourneau, all while that Gadella has only fought one time since that fight, since 2014? Claudia has fought one person. One person.
And this is your top flight contender.
One person leading into this fight. That's how bad blood this is in this fight.
And when you have bad blood, it sells you tickets.
And it's going to sell for the Ultimate Fighter. But you look at it, did Gadelha learn anything in that fight from 2014? Don't leave it in the hands of the judges. Is she going to try to win another grinding match and hope for the best? Or is she going to finally finish a fight? Will she finish the fight, or will JJ finish the fight?
I hope JJ finishes the fight. I really do. For her well-being, I hope she does.
But we picked Claudia Gadelha, and our pick with Fightbook, as that's who we have winning. So you're going to go ahead and say, you know what? You're going JJ?
I'm going to go with JJ just for the sheer fact that on air, we are two different people. Remember, on air, I'm calling it the way I see it. I honestly believe Joanna JJ is going to beat Gadea. But if I'm off the air, I'm thinking Gadea has a shot. But on air, I'm staying with Joanna JJ.
So then when Claudia wins, I'm laughing at you, and I'm laughing at my wife all the way to the bank, just like I did when I said that Michael Bisping was going to win and knocked out Luke Rockhold. So
actually, we both said
that Michael Bisping was going to beat Luke Rockhold. We all picked Michael Bisping over Luke Rockhold.
Fine, then I'll just be laughing at this one over you two because I'm going Claudia Gardelia. Fightbook's picking Claudia. But you know what? He says unanimous decision. I'm the ballsy twin in predictions. So guess what I'm going to predict? I'm going to predict a second round TKO of JJ.
That's a tough one. Either way, this is getting one of the girls getting put on the canvas.
See, my wife is predicting JJ wins second round TKO of Claudia.
I'm thinking it's a rear naked choke, and I'm going Joanna JJ.
Either way, this fight card is finally for all the marbles. All your questions are going to be answered at UFC 200, UFC Fight Night 90, UFC The Ultimate Fighter 90, UFC Fight Week will have all the answers, and the UFC landscape will forever be altered.
Absolutely. But Sean, I'm giddy like a schoolgirl. We got the lightweight champion from Bellator MMA, Michael Chandler, joining the DuCrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors, where he sat down with you to talk about so much. We'll be right back with this interview that you don't want to miss with your boys at DuCrosse Brothers, Sports Warriors, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Excelsior and Paris Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
All right, everybody.
You are listening right now to the DuCrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are the DuCrosse Brothers Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan DuCrosse. Well, on my side, as always, is my partner in crime, the one and only, Sean. So, Tristan,
it was a blessing to have you, Bellator's own light heavyweight champion, Michael Chandler, once again joining the Sports Warriors.
All right, Michael Chandler, welcome to the DuCrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors. Glad to have you back after your big win at Bellator 157 with yet another impressive win in St. Louis.
Yes, it was a very, very good night. I am ecstatic. You know, it's only been about 7 days. Actually, today is the 8th day, so I'm kind of still on vacation mode. But I have definitely watched the highlight, and I have definitely been thinking about the future, so I'm excited.
You talk about thinking about the future. What does the future look like for Michael Chandler?
We will see. A lot of title defenses for sure. Definitely some big fights. I mean, there's some big fights out there. I still have some unfinished business with Josh Thompson. So I wish him a speedy recovery. I hope he comes back very soon. And you know, the Benson Henderson fight is out there, as well as a tough stable of guys in on the Bellator roster that all are very hungry. I've had a couple people hitting me up on Twitter saying they want to fight me, so that's completely normal. But it's great to have a target on your back because that means you must be doing something right. So I'm just I'm excited to take a little time off, spend some time with my wife more immediately, you know, for the next couple weeks, and then figure out what's next. But right now I'm on vacation mode. I'm in full-fledged husband mode and just enjoying her and enjoying time together.
You talked about unfinished business with Josh Thompson. What makes it unfinished? Is it because he pulled out of the fight leading up to your title shot, or is there more of a backstory to it?
No, there's definitely not a backstory, really. You know, I actually, I respect Josh a ton. There's no animosity. I just think it's – I think this is a heck of a sport, and he's a heck of an athlete, and I feel like I'm a heck of an athlete, so I would love to step in the cage with him. I was more excited about that Josh Thompson fight than I was even when I found out that I was fighting for a world title. I wanted that title fight. I want big fights. I want big names. I want guys who have been in this sport and who have done and accomplished some great things, and Josh Thompson is that. So, you know, you got to remember, too, I started with Bellator in 2010. I've had a few big fights, but not at the magnitude that I want, you know. And you get a guy like Josh Thompson coming over. You get a guy like Benson Henderson coming over. You get some of these names that are coming over to Bellator. Those are the fights that I want. Those are the big fights that are going to cause big draws and big numbers, and that's really what I want. That's what I'm in the sport for, especially as I have matured into, you know, being a 30-year-old myself now and I'm more of a veteran of the sport. I've been in the sport long enough. It's about getting the big fights. So I think Josh Thompson's a great fight for me. It's a great fight that the fans want to see. He has a reputation of going out there, biting down on his mouthpiece and scrapping really hard, and that's kind of what I do as well. So we will see if and when he comes back, if he'll fight me. We'll see.
And I guess you kind of answered my other question that I had to you, and it revolves around Benson Henderson. Benson Henderson came into Bellator, immediately got a title shot, and now he's dropping down to 155. Does he deserve an immediate title shot at 155 after he just lost his debut fight?
You know, I think this is a crazy sport, and at the end of the day, the matchmakers and the promotions run the show. You know, I think there's a lot of things that might not necessarily make sense on paper that make sense business-wise. There's definitely a lot of things that don't make sense business-wise, but they make sense on paper. They make sense for a promoter to make the fights. It happens in the UFC. It happens in Bellator. It happens in every organization. It happens in a lot of different sports as well. So do I think that it's that some of the guys on the roster might be pretty mad if they get kind of skipped over by a guy who came in at welterweight, lost, and then now he's getting title shot at 155? Probably. But do I think Benson Henderson is the biggest name for me to fight? Absolutely. So, you know, it's a catch-22, and it's a tough situation. And these promoters, you know, Scott Coker, Rich Chu, they know what they're doing, and they can't be worried about people's feelings. They can't be worried about people's emotions. They got to make the best fights possible. And I think the Benson Henderson versus Michael Chandler fight will be fireworks. I think it's a fight that people have wanted to see since, honestly, 2011. He was the champion of the UFC. I was champion of Bellator, and people wanted to know who was the best lightweight in the world, you know, and we never got to do that. And now we get the opportunity to do it. And I think it's the best time in the world for me to fight him. I feel the best that I've ever been. So I'm confident in my abilities, confident in myself, and confident that I would come home with the victory. And I'm excited. So we'll see.
Michael Chandler here with the Sports Warriors. Talk about the lightweight division. What was your thought process when Will Brooks was let go by Bellator that led to your opportunity at a vacant lightweight title?
I mean, it made sense. I mean, did it, you know, like I said, these promoters have to make decisions, but whenever it did not come as a surprise, you know, at the end of the day, a company has to run, a company has employees. And if you have a rotten apple, you know, you got to get rid of the rotten apple, whether he was the champion or not. So it made sense what they did. Do I wish it would have happened? No, not necessarily. Would I have liked to fight him? Of course. But at the end of the day, this is the fight business. Rosters change. Promotions are changing. Guys are retiring. Things are happening every single day with these rosters, and different guys get different opportunities. And I was just there to take the opportunity when it was presented to me. And like I said, I'm the best I've ever been. I was confident in my abilities, whether I stepped in the cage with Patricky or him or anybody else in the whole lightweight division in the whole world last Friday night, that I would have been able to come away with the win. So, you know, there's no sense in looking back. I'm only looking forward. I'm just excited about what the future holds. I'm excited to be the lightweight champion. I'm excited to be a guy who has been a phenomenal ambassador of the sport since my inception in the sport, and be a guy who's been a great advocate and a great ambassador for the organization of Bellator.
Michael Chandler, you can't say enough about you personally, and I think your tattoo on your chest says it best. And after you winning your title at Bellator 157, it would pretty much coincide with everything, is that you are truly blessed.
Yeah, I am, man. And it's a humbling experience. It's a humbling life I get to live. I mean, I get to live a life that a lot of people dream about. I was blessed with an amazing wife who supports me going all the way across the country for not just one training camp, but then Josh Thompson pulls out and then I have to spend a whole nother training camp there away from her while she's here and she works and she has her own goals and she loves me and supports me. And I've just been truly blessed with an amazing family, a mom and dad who worked two jobs to make sure I was able to go to every wrestling camp, to be able to become the wrestler that I was, to be able to become the competitor that I am today and the fighter that I am today. And, you know, and it just goes to show, I think when my story is written, when my autobiography is written, that people are going to see it and they're going to see the 12 dominant victories to start my career, 10 of those finishes and 7 or 8 of those in the first round, just dominant. And then you go through 688 days without a win, 688 days down in the valley. But it just continues to show that if you keep the faith in yourself, you keep the faith that good things are going to happen, that your next big break is just right around the corner, that the next handshake, the next hand that you shake is going to be your next big break. You know, it gives you a better outlook on life, and it just goes to show that the storm can only last so long, you know. And now here we are a couple of years removed from – honestly, probably one of the worst stretches in modern MMA history. You know, I think I can only really think of one guy who went through a stretch like that, and that's Robbie Lawler. And he's a great guy in and of himself.
And then look, he turned it around. Now he's a world champ too.
Exactly, you know. So it just goes to show that no matter how crazy the storm is, no matter how high the waves get, no matter how fast the sand is sinking beneath your feet, good things are still in store for you if you continue to believe and if you continue to press forward. And that's just where I am right now. And here I am, world champion, and talking to you. And I appreciate this opportunity and everybody, every single fan that has followed my career and every single fan who has supported me since day one. You know, I cannot thank you guys enough.
Michael Chandler here with the Sports Warriors. Michael Chandler, thank you. I mean, it's been a pleasure. This is now the second time we've gotten a chance to speak to you, and it's an honor to listen to you speak and about your future. And one of the things that stood out was that at the end of when you won your title, you said that you also went to the Black Zillions. How much of a difference training camp was it training with the Black Zillions and being able to, I'm trying to remember the last conversation we had with you, but I don't think you were training full time last time with the Black Zillions with Neil Melanson, that he came to you last time. And now this time you went to him?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Black Zillion training camp for me has been phenomenal. You know, I moved all the way across the country for a training camp for one reason and one reason only, and that is my longtime coach since day one, Neil Melanson, who's not just my grappling coach, but he's my head coach. He's my dear friend. He's my mentor. And he's family to me. You know, I've known him for 8 years, and I can't think of a more loyal, I can't think of a more supportive, more loving person to be in your life, aside from the fact that he's the greatest grappling coach in the entire world. And he's finally starting to get recognition. For the, you know, to see what he did with Anthony Johnson's grappling game. You see what he's done with so many of these guys' grappling games down there at the Black Zillions. He is the greatest coach on earth, and he's the greatest motivator on earth. So it's so awesome to be able to have a guy like that in your corner, and that was the reason I went down there. And him and I have made some magic together, and I'm so happy that we were able to, you know, win this world title together. And then I went down there kind of blinded, just knowing that I had a phenomenal training, a phenomenal ground coach. And then I meet Henry Hooft, and I realize how great his striking system is and what he has done with my striking game, with my kickboxing game, just with my range. If you go back and you watch that knockout, there's a perfect little clip where it's a faint jab. My feet come in and I close the distance without Patricky seeing it. And then I throw that right hand that he thought was out of range, but I'm actually in range. And all that is just Henry Hooft's basic kickboxing system, and he is a genius. And it's just so great to train under him. And then you think about just the number of guys there, the training partners, dudes that are pushing you, dudes that have no egos. Honestly, I went there with a little bit of a name, obviously, and I thought I was going to be kind of a guy that dudes just wanted to beat up on and prove themselves, and they were so the exact opposite. It was a phenomenal training camp. Every single guy there was awesome. Coach Greg Jones on the wrestling. Evan Boris is another one of our Hoof kickboxing instructors, and it's just an amazing system, and I can't wait to go back, you know?
So is that going to be permanently your new camp or just something you're going to fluctuate between the two?
You know, I've been saying this as of late, by no means do I plan on going anywhere else. I plan on definitely going back to the Black Zillions for my next training camp, whenever that may be. But in MMA, I've realized over 8 years that nothing is permanent, you know, just like we were talking earlier about, you know, the Bellator roster, the UFC roster, those rosters changing all the time. Coaching changes happen all the time. You know, gyms fluctuate up and then fluctuate down, and they're the best team. They're the best team in the world 1 year, then they're not the best team the next year. And it's a crazy volatile sport. So for all you young MMA fighters, for all you fighters now who are struggling with that, figure out who your true team is, who your true support system is. For me, I found it in a man named Neil Melanson. And honestly, if he moved to Alaska tomorrow, I would probably do my next training camp in Alaska. You know, that's the kind of faith that I have in him. And once you find that, hold on to it. Don't sacrifice it. Don't go any other direction than that, you know? So I'm definitely doing my next training camp at the Black Zillions as long as he's there. And I'm excited. If I can recreate exactly what I did this last training camp down there again, you're going to see a more improved fighter in myself next fight. We didn't get to see it a ton this fight, but my ground game has improved. My striking has improved. I've improved mentally, physically, spiritually. I'm just excited.
I think everybody's excited for what's next for Michael Chandler. And Michael Chandler here with the Sports Warriors. You know we got to talk about it because it's been mentioned since after the fight. I can't let you go without bringing it up. What did you say to Patricio? And then we talked about Scott Coker and the matchups that he may have with everybody else. He's what I call a mad scientist. Is there any future bout where at any point in time we may see a Michael Chandler versus Patricio Pitbull finally happening?
I think it's a possibility. I'm not necessarily interested in it. I mean, it doesn't really benefit me much to fight a 145 pounder. You know, if he comes up to 155 and he fight and says, I'm a 155 pounder, I want to fight Michael Chandler because he knocked out my brother. You know, we can definitely squash that beef. And I think, unfortunately for him, I think he's a smaller version of himself. He doesn't hit as hard. It's going to be very easy for me to outstrike him, out wrestle him, out grapple him. Joe Warren wrote the blueprint to beat him a couple of years ago and just broke him, you know, broke him mentally. And I have no doubt in my mind that I would do that. But I got some big names in my future with Benson Henderson and Josh Thompson and the rest of the 155 pounders. So if he wants to come up and get cut down to size, I will definitely entertain that if the fans want it, the Pitbull brothers have a huge following in Brazil. If the country of Brazil wants it, I will definitely spoil their day. So we'll see. But I mean, he just came up to me, stuck his finger in my face, and said, "I want to fight you." And I said, "You want to fight me? I will break you." And then I said, "Beat it, nerd." And then they pulled him away. And it was a funny little altercation. And I'm glad we didn't touch each other. I'm glad it didn't escalate from there. And we'll see what transpires in the future.
Michael Chandler, what I just don't get is that why does Patrice, he did the same thing to Will Brooks, and now he's doing the same thing to you. It's like, at what point do you just toughen up and move up in weight then?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of interesting that it's now happened a couple of different times. I mean, you got to realize these guys come from a different country. These guys, you know, I think, and that's kind of what I said back in the day when the fight with Brooks happened, the altercation. Like these guys aren't Americans. Americans are a little more talk than they are walk. And these guys come from the streets of Brazil, where, you know, you say something to them, they don't handle it like Americans. Americans will squash it, and their bark is bigger than their bite. They come from the streets of Brazil, where, you know, fighting is life. You know, altercations are normal, you know? And so that's kind of what I was saying back then. You can't say stuff to these guys without, you know, something possibly transpiring. So we're lucky nothing happened there on national television after that fight, you know, 'cause I probably took it a little too far. And you know, we'll see. Come on, hop on up. I mean, he looks, you know, he's not going to look very good at 155. He's only about, you know, 5'6", and he's going to be holding a lot of body fat coming up to 155. And I don't know. I just I like that fight for me if it happens. But I got some bigger and better fights on my horizon. More viewership, more money, all that kind of stuff. That's in my future. So I'm excited for that.
I'd be too. Michael Chandler, thank you for joining the Sports Warriors.
You got it. Thank you very much. And I will talk to you guys after the next win.
All right. Looking forward to it, man. Take care.
Yes, sir. See ya.
There you go. Michael Chandler took his time to join the Sports Warriors. Like his chest said, and like I said in the interview, blessed. He's blessed. We were blessed with the interview. Can't wait for more fights to come before him.
Wait for his next fight so he can come back and talk to us.
Right, because apparently he's now 2-0 since stopped talking to us.
Right.
So let's go ahead and make it 3-0. I'm cool with it. So for that, we are the Sports Warriors. I'm Sean.
I'm Tristan Newcross. We are the Sports Warriors. And until next time, we're out of here.
You can follow us on Twitter at the Ducross Bros. Follow us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross. Or like our fan page at the Ducross Bros. Hit up our website at www.thehotspotshow.com. Until next time, we're done. We're out.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.